You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose, made possible by CenturyLink. In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, November 18th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. And my guests on the countdown this week, choosing the three most important federal news stories of the week, are Tim Hecht of AgileX. It's good to see you again, my friend. Nice
it's
to have you on the program.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And we'll talk about Thanksgiving in a little bit because you have a good Thanksgiving plan coming up. Deborah Roth of the law firm Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and one of the co-hosts of Fed Talk. You were just here doing Fed Talk like 2-3 hours ago.
I was. Thank you.
And here you are again. We should have just gotten you a cot.
I felt like I should have just had a cubicle.
Yeah, that's right. We'll just let you work from here. It's great to have both of you on the countdown this week. This is the last Federal News Countdown before Thanksgiving, and there won't be one next week. So next Friday at the same time, it'll be you guys again. So there's no pressure, though, to perform
to
well.
Gap.
You're both going to be local for Thanksgiving, right?
That's right.
Excellent.
That's right.
And Debbie, you?
Oh, yeah, no.
Okay, good.
I'm fortunate not to have to drive onto the Beltway.
Yay.
To get my turkey dinner.
All right, good for you. Have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll have a great countdown. And we always start with...
Number three!
Third most important federal news story of the week, according to Deborah Roth, is the government executive story. Headline, Postal Service will resume FERS retirement contributions next month. And there were some folks that I think might have taken this as a better sign than it actually is. If they're going to start paying money in again, they must be doing better. But they're not really doing much better, are
yeah,
they?
Yeah, and that's why, you know, it was my story. Isn't the headline, like, sort of backwards? It conveys the wrong thing. They're still in dire straits. It's more dire than it ever was. And the only reason why they're able to make their contribution, their FERS retirement benefits, the premium contribution, is because this is their busy season, they report. And so they have a lot of things going into the mail, so they're going to make their contribution. But they were relieved of $5.1 billion of their contribution for 2011. And what they're saying for 2012 is they will not be able to repay the 2011 contribution, and they will not be able to make their 2012 contribution, total of $10 billion. So everybody knows in town that, you know, the House and Senate are looking at all of the requests from the Postal Service to do a reorganization and a restructuring, deal with their labor costs and the facilities issue. My favorite statistic about the Postal Service, and ironically, Francis, the last time I was on your show was in August, and this was either – it was in my top three stories, and your other guest, it was in his top three stories. So I think as long as it pops back up on the news, it's very important, because not that every federal agency has these issues, because they're funded by appropriations, not by their actual income, but depending upon where the budget's head – other agencies are going to have to deal with some of the issues on a smaller degree that the Postal Service has to deal with.
The story also says CFO Joe Corbett says USPS will probably run out of money by the end of fiscal 2012, even if it doesn't have to pre-fund retirees' health benefits, which to me speaks to where this story really is.
Right. My favorite statistic is, I have two favorite statistics about the Postal Service. In the last 5 years, mail volume has declined by 22%. Mail volume is revenue. You know, so it's a 22, I mean, the revenue's probably declined differently, but it's a 22% decline in revenue every year. Last year, 2011, it was 1.7% decline. They're predicting a 2% decline for 2012. And the second stat is 80% of their costs are wages and benefits. And when they compare it to their competitors, UPS and FedEx, who are at 60% and 40%, you can see, when you factor in that 20 to 40%, you can see why they're not struggling, they're dying.
Yeah. If you add that 20 to 40% to the bottom line, as their competitors are able to do, you see a lot different picture.
Right. Now, now, of course, FedEx and UPS are private companies, so if they decide that their distribution or their collection locations aren't working out, aren't being serviced, they can close them. Postal Service wants to close 3,700 facilities. They got to go to Congress to close them. And going to Congress and getting Congress to do anything that has political consequences in the last year or few years, you know, stymied.
We'll actually talk about that concept a little bit later in the program.
Yeah, just stymied.
Deborah Roth's number three story this week is from GovExec. The headline, Postal Service will resume FERS retirement contributions next month. Tim Hext, your story, number three, is from the New York Times. And the headline is, Oh, the Places We Could Go. And I love the way this story starts. The high point was when I got to bomb Mars.
Right.
What's the deal behind this?
Well, while the implications of this as a federal news story might be obscure, that my thought, that the point of this story is that the Museum of Natural History in New York has got an exhibit that is focused on the space exploration, and all sorts of cool stuff are described in the story about how you can explore Mars and imagine living in space and so on. The reason I thought this was interesting was maybe twofold. First, as we approach the holidays, it's a nice thing to think about, engaging your children in science and exploration when you're visiting New York this holiday season. But more importantly, maybe this was in my head because earlier this week I was at a dinner and Charles Bolden, the administrator of NASA, spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very much talking about how NASA is still strongly in the space business, even though the shuttle has now been decommissioned. And he went on and on about how we have probes that are long since been launched that are going to Jupiter and to Pluto, and we're doing probes that are about to explore Mars in a whole new way, and issues associated with living in zero gravity and the new solar sail and all these very advanced forms of science in which NASA is still very heavily engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And so it says a bit of a campaign that he appears to be on to educate everybody on how valuable those kinds of things are. I'm a nutcase for the idea that basic science inside government is something we can't let get out of reach, because a lot of times government's the only one who will do it. Used to be that the government was where scientists wanted to go when mm-hmm. they graduated to do this kind of work.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, this story struck a chord with me that when we have these kinds of things in an environment like we are in now where we think about what gets cut first in government,
yeah.
We want to avoid this being the place.
I wonder what it says about public perception of the space program, not just NASA as a federal agency, but the space program as an American institution at this
sure.
point in time, that he has to do that he has to make a speech, the thrust of which is, hey, we're still here and we're still relevant, is what it sounds like to
sure.
me.
Sure. And we've always identified so much with putting men on the moon mm-hmm. as the icon of what the space program is about, right? Because
mm-hmm.
because of, you know, our early journeys there. But what the science part of NASA has been over so many years is so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's trying to remind people that now that we don't have that as much of a focus with our own vehicles taking people into space. So I'm all for it, and I thought that when we think about an exhibit like this one, it underlines, in this case, mostly for children,
mm-hmm.
How important it is to continue to keep these priorities at the forefront.
Tim Hext's story from the New York Times about NASA and called Oh, the Places We Could Go is linked up right now on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Story number two from Tim Hext and Deborah Roth when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Executive Director, Field Operations, VA Office of Information and Technology on the Federal Executive Forum on Trusted Identities and Identity Management, sponsored by Booz Allen Hamilton.
We always hear healthcare researchers saying, if I only had more longitudinal information, all of the health information that somebody can bring with them when they have an issue, when they have an unexpected illness, when they show up in the emergency room. These are tremendous weaknesses, and they put our healthcare professionals, and not just in VA, this is really, you know, a global issue, at a disadvantage.
To listen to the whole program, program made possible by Trezza Media Group. Log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Today, computer attacks are more frequent, distributed, easy to mount, persistent, and disruptive than ever before. Some sectors are doing a better job than others in proactively addressing these concerns, though most do so following an attack. Booz Allen Hamilton believes that incentives which may or may not currently exist can stimulate greater corporate investment in proactive cybersecurity protection measures. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at BoozAllen.com/expertvoices.
Now there's a simpler way to pay for the goods and services your agency needs. Using GSA Smart Pay 2, cardholders can buy large ticket items, make recurring payments, and conduct micro purchases without delays. You can even use GSA Smart Pay 2 to make payments for contracts, grants, utility bills, and much more. Accepted around the world, GSA Smart Pay 2 works just like the charge cards you already know, while offering a broad range of benefits. With GSA Smart Pay 2, you gain access to powerful financial tools to provide you with insight and control over your agency's expenses. Best of all, GSA Smart Pay 2 is a proven and effective way to save the government millions of dollars. To find out more about GSA Smart Pay 2, visit smartpay.gsa.gov. That's smartpay.gsa.gov. GSA Smart Pay 2, a simpler, unified way to pay.
To make a commitment is to see things through, confident that no matter what the obstacles, we can build something better together. With the planned combination of AT&T and T-Mobile, we're making a commitment to create a stronger network for all our customers. We will invest an additional $8 billion and build out the next generation of mobile broadband to nearly everyone in America. Building that network will mean better coverage, better call quality, and faster downloads. But it will also create as many as 96,000 American jobs. And we will begin bringing 5,000 jobs to America from overseas. We're committed to investing in America now. Why? Well, we know it's good business. Because America has always been, and always will be, a smart investment. AT&T. Rethink possible.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. The struggling Postal Service has a new idea for electronic products and services. We'll hear about eMailbox and eLockbox and how they could boost revenue. And the Consumer Product Safety Commission has a new self-reporting tool for businesses. We'll find out how it works. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week with the most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Tim Hex of Agilex and Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And we're up on the countdown to
number two.
And Debbie's second most important federal news story of the week is actually, we get a twofer on the countdown at number two. The main story is from the Gallup survey, the people that do the Gallup polls, and their story's headline, Congress's job approval entrenched at record low of 13%. Now, I normally don't let my guests do two first, but on this one I had to throw this chart in because it's not actually, your second one's not actually an article. It's this chart that I found hilarious.
Thank you.
And this is
I owe it to my staff. They found it.
This is from Talking Points Memo, the website. And this graph shows other institutions that are more popular than Congress weighing in. According to this, in October of this year, New York Times CBS poll found Congress's popularity at 9%.
Mm-hmm.
Hugo Chavez in 2007 polled at 9%, according to a Gallup survey. The idea of the United States going communist polled 11%,
right. So that's higher rating.
2 points ahead of Congress. BP during the oil spill in the Gulf in 2010 polled at 16% popularity, so they're 5 points ahead of Congress on this chart. This one is my favorite one because you gave me this chart, Debbie. Lawyers.
Thank you.
Polled at 29% popularity approval rating.
I was going
rating.
With banks.
That's right.
I was going with banks.
Well, you know. And for our government audience, the Internal Revenue Service, not known as being the most popular of federal agencies,
polls at the lowest.
Yeah. In 2009, a Gallup survey got them a 40% popularity rating, which is a lot higher than I would have expected. But when you quantify it, four times more popular than Congress. When you are one quarter the popularity of the Internal Revenue Service, you should just quit.
Or the banks, you know. I mean, there's an enormous consensus in our country that the banks bear some responsibility and that they still possess an enormous amount of wealth that they're holding on to. And the banks polled at 23%. I love this chart, and I have to thank the people who work for me who found it.
Yeah, this is a great chart.
It's fabulous. And one of the stats I heard, the Gallup poll has Congress at 13%. This chart has them at approval rating. This chart has them at 9%. I heard also this week another poll, and I heard that it was 9% approval rating for how Congress was handling the jobs bills. So it's somewhere between 13% and 9%. All the predictions, which is
still stinks.
It's the toilet. The average Gallup Gallup polled them at the entire year. It averaged at 17. You know, they were always, you know, in the 20s. They were never great. They always were significantly lower than the sitting president. So you have to sort of see it from that perspective. Another great one was Nixon during Watergate. His approval rating polled at 24%.
Wow.
I mean, it just tells you the level. It's so – Americans are so dissatisfied with Congress. And so it's – you know, obviously I'm on your countdown – obviously, we're talking to the federal community. You can only imagine how federal employees view how Congress is handling their work. It's like what they do when they go to work every day. And it's very difficult to go to work every day for a year and not know where's the business of the agency going to be.
Tim, the U.S. Congress is less popular than Paris Hilton.
I know.
Now, By
a significant margin.
Yeah, it's not even close.
My question on this, well, two things. First, when you think of Nixon during Watergate, for instance, you might even say, well, you know what? He still had supporters. There were people who didn't believe it or whatever, and so he gets some.
That's where he got 24%.
He gets some support. That's right. He gets a quarter percent.
Yes.
But here, you think it's so broken in a partisan way that at least maybe I like my half, but this doesn't even support that.
That's true.
Right? And
that's a good point.
It's deteriorated to the point where I don't like the polled don't like even their favorite half.
Right. And that's what Gallup also, when you read the Gallup story that I collected, it was they polled people on their party affiliation, and it was across political parties, independents, Republicans, Democrat, regardless of party affiliation.
All in a range of 11 to 15%
that's
approval.
That's right. It tells you where Americans are. Of course, you take that down to the federal employee level because that's the other branch of government. Like you move yourself inside the beltway, and the beltway is all about government. We tend to talk about government in this town as the executive branch. But frankly, the arm of government, the branch of government this year and maybe even the last 2 years that has really, caused the greatest effect on both federal employees and I think the broader American community is Congress. It's this lack of stymied. It's the lack of getting anything done.
So I have a question. The headline above the reference to this says that this comes from Senator Bennett's office. And so to what extent do we feel they are self-aware about this? And how – we were talking about this a little bit earlier.
Tim and I were before your show.
If anything, this is a community of people that is concerned with their popularity and their ability to
especially
get reelected.
Especially in an election year.
And so, this has got to be really important to them. And – is it something they can't control because it's a collective assessment? You know, maybe they all think, well, I'm not the unpopular one. Or is this going to impact their behavior? Maybe when we talk about your other story, it's it's I'm just curious to what extent we think they care about this.
Well, here's my thought on that. The end of the survey in the methodology says results for this Gallup poll are based on telephone interviews conducted November 3rd to 6th, 2011, with a random sample of 1,012 adults. 1,012, I think, is an interesting number.
Pretty random.
Yeah. Aged 18 and older, living in all 50 states in the District of Columbia. It doesn't say anything there about registered voters or likely voters. And so when you add in the part about people being disaffected and so convinced that the process is so broken that my vote doesn't matter and I don't care because they're going to screw it up whether no matter who I vote for, when you take out that segment of the population and you look at the likely voters
of who's going to the polls,
right, that's when I think you get to the people that Senator, and I'm not picking on Senator Bennett, he just happens to be the name attached to this chart,
yeah,
but he and his colleagues, that's who they care about. If you've ever been inside a political campaign, they don't care about the vast majority of people. They care about the likely people who may vote for their candidate that they can get to show up that day, and that's what it's all about. And for the mechanics of a political campaign, that is what they should think about. It's like a business who thinks about how can we super serve our customers and how can we potentially recruit new customers who will like our stuff. But if this person doesn't like our stuff, they're never going to come to in our business anyway, so why should we care about them? It's the same concept,
sure,
I think.
That makes sense.
And that's why I believe that there's a disconnect between what members of Congress think about the public at large and what they think about the people in their states or districts.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Of course, that's a very insider view on the politics of the strategy, the political strategy of running a campaign, because it's clear Congress was heading that there. I think many Americans felt, certainly federal employees felt, that, you know, starting at the beginning of 2011, every decision Congress was making or not making, avoiding, was to position themselves, their members, for the 2012 general election. And, of course, as it gets closer and closer, we've seen that. If you've been in this town, you know, you've seen as it gets closer and closer, it's just, it's all lame duck. Tim and I were talking before the show, and he thought that that they would be concerned enough about their perception that they would actually do something to you know, move the ball. I feel more skeptical. I'm not saying I don't think so.
Yeah.
I feel like we've been hoodwinked several times by Congress this year. I think federal employees feel that way. I think many people who are unemployed feel that way. But you have to wonder, do they have enough cohesiveness to actually move the ball?
I agree more with you.
So that their popularity increases.
I agree more with you, Debbie, than I do with Tim, and I'll explain why when we talk more about this later on in the Federal News Countdown. Deborah Roth's story number two is actually a Gallup poll, and from their website, headlined, Congress's job approval entrenched at record low of 13%. On that chart that you that we talked about, you can see that on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth2, along with the stories that we're talking about on the countdown today. When we come back, Tim Hecht's story number two on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Previously on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, there was a special panel conversation about the F-35 program. Discussing the mission of the program, it's Tom Burbidge, Executive VP and GM of F-35 Program Integration.
I think the best way to think about this is not from an air superiority standpoint, but from the multi-role missions that the airplane performs. We actually have 22, I think it is, different missions that the airplane is designed to perform, and many of them are to hold strategic targets at risk. Sometimes we get into this dialogue about nobody else has an airplane that's quite as good as ours in the sky today. That's certainly true, but this airplane's principal mission is to hold a strategic target on the ground at risk, and I think everybody would agree that understands the challenge that there's been a proliferation of integrated defense systems that surround geographical, strategically important targets. Penetrating that defense system and being effective in the future going forward is a real change in requirements versus what today's airplanes are capable of doing.
To listen to the whole program, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword F-35.
Leading the way to better vision, United Healthcare Vision understands the importance of good eyesight for you and your family. That's why United Healthcare Vision programs offer federal enrollees and their families a convenient mix of independent and retail providers and industry-leading benefits for glasses, contacts, and discounts on LASIK procedures. United Healthcare Vision is the clear choice. In fact, 9 out of 10 United Healthcare Vision Fed VIP members would recommend the plan to family and friends. The Fed VIP open season period for federal employees and retirees is from November 14th through December 12th. Don't miss out on this opportunity to protect your most precious gift, the gift of sight. For more information about benefit plans and how to enroll, visit United Healthcare Vision at myuhcvision.com/fedvip. myuhcvision.com/fedvip. If you want industry-leading vision benefits and a convenient provider network, look no further than United Healthcare Vision this open season.
A new company with more than 50 years of experience, ITT Defense is now ITT Excellus. The reliable, flexible partner you've come to know is now tightly focused on providing innovative, essential C4ISR solutions and information and technical services. Work with a true partner, ready to solve your challenges with situational agility and a record of rapidly fielding affordable solutions. Experience the power of ingenuity at excellusinc.com.
A dose of exercise. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. People being treated for depression may find exercise can pick up where medication leaves off. A study reviewed the effects of aerobic activity as a second treatment in patients who did not do well on their original antidepressant medication. About 30 minutes worth of exercise 4 days a week proved to have an impact. Dr. Mudakar Trivedi is at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas.
It was the dose. The type of exercise was all aerobic. Some of them used treadmills, some of them used a stationary bike, but the real important ingredient was the total energy expenditure or the dose of the exercise.
Exercise can improve overall health and reduce your risk for heart disease or diabetes. The study in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
The Washington Caps and Skydex Technologies have teamed up to raise money for the TAPS organization through the sale of Courage Caps and T-shirts. TAPS is a tragedy assistance resource for anyone who has suffered the loss of a military loved one in service to our country. Courage Caps and T-shirts go on sale Saturday, November 12th. Help support the families and loved ones of our honored military men and women. Visit washingtoncaps.com/couragecaps for more information.
Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. The Federal News Countdown is the program where every Friday at 3 o'clock, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are most important to the people who work for the federal government. They rank them in order from number 3 to number 1 and then come into the studio and count them down with me. This week it's Deborah Roth of the law firm Shaw, Bransford & Roth and Tim Hext of AgileX. And Tim, your story number 2 on the countdown this week is from, where is this from?
Well, it's from Wired's blog.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Blogs print out funny.
They do,
and,
yes.
And so, and I'm looking at the hard copy of this.
Yes, and this is a bit of an opinion piece, too. So.
Well, and but the title of it's fascinating, and it's called Why NIST Should Scrap the Cloud Entirely. What did you see here that you thought was noteworthy?
So NIST recently came out with a roadmap that defines the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of this article is not so much that the idea of cloud should be scrapped. It's a bit of a commentary on the futility of trying to define it in such a formal way.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't swing a stick today in discussions in information technology without hitting somebody who's got the cloud in their slides. It's like a joke that you can't give a keynote talk without mm-hmm. mentioning the cloud mm-hmm. or a couple of other things. And so the what NIST has tried to do is to say, here's the guidelines for how to go cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And once you write that down, you've defined it in a way that most people will disagree with. No matter mm-hmm. how you define it,
right.
most will disagree.
Right.
And so we spend a lot of time working on cloud-ish things,
mm-hmm.
but whether it's software as a service or infrastructure as a service or platforms as a service. And so the point of this article is that NIST might be better served rather than trying to define this wildly amorphous thing and hope that federal agencies can adopt it in some way. They should get much more specific and start defining those things like email or a financial system or a human resources system or data center consolidation, all of the many things that are different flavors of what go on when we think about the benefit of moving information technology into the cloud. They ought to get more specific and start defining what those things are, how to proceed toward doing them, who's doing them well, what are the guidelines, how to secure them, all the things that NIST does. And so I just thought it was an interesting perspective on not just everybody saying, oh, great, NIST has finally defined it, but it, you know, it's, how do you define it?
Debbie, this looks to me, too, if you pull back and look at the broader level of this, this to me is kind of a quintessential example of how the government sometimes approaches any kind of issue by defining the, in this case, defining the vehicle rather than the destination. You know, Tim's talking about the things that we want to get to, the things we want to accomplish using cloud computing, and that's where the focus is on what is the tool that we're going to use to accomplish these things instead of what does this look like using a new methodology? What does, as Tim said, what does email look like and so on? This is the way government seems to do things all the time.
It does. And, you know, and over time you see that the government recognizes who, you know, the head of the executive branch, whoever it may be at time, that they sort of recognize that we get stuck in the vehicle. I mean, a great example was, do you remember back in, you know, it was in the early part of this century, but late 1990s, when the FBI spent how much of a decade trying to put into place a new case management system, which required enormous technology. And there was so much focus on the vehicle, and the vehicle kept getting wronger and wronger, that they had to go back to Congress to scrap it, and it was this that had already been spent. And it was this crazy amount of money. But you see that kind of happening over and over. I think, in all fairness to the government, that that's part of what happens in a bureaucracy, that bureaucracy is exactly what we think. It's like lots of different components and people and competing interests. And the solution over time has been to sort of create these like super councils. So you have the CIO council, you have the human capital council, and which you would think the CIO council would be very interested in these issues of cloud computing and technology and where's the government going.
Well, and the CIOs and
I don't think they do such a great job. When you look at these councils they've set up, you know, in the last 10 years, you hear a lot about what they say and do, and it's all these like very broad policy. But then when you watch it get implemented down in the agencies, where's the improvement?
Tim, the CIOs certainly tell me they understand the concept of the destination as opposed to the vehicle. That's what they want.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they need.
That's right.
They don't necessarily need this as much because they know people in industry that they can trust to tell them about the vehicle that will tell them how this is how we're going to drive you in this vehicle to this destination.
That's right. And so from my mind, the tenets that make up this umbrella concept of cloudness are really correct and right, and it's not a new thing. We've been migrating toward these ideas over quite a long time, but because it has become a fancy idea that people want to talk about in the media or in these council meetings or in conferences, they prioritize it as something needs to be defined. But I think what the federal organizations are really looking to for NIST is guidance on standardizing how we go about doing things.
Yep.
And they're just, this article just cries out that says, look, you need to go a lot more specific and define all of the practical things within that umbrella concept rather than trying to, it's like just defining, I don't know, religion.
You know, yep.
It depends who you talk to.
Right, it was the FBI case management system in the 90s. We need a better case management system.
And, yeah. Well, but something like that, you might say, oh, if I'm going to have a case management system, I want to do it in a network-centric way and leverage cloud. Well, why? Because I'll reduce costs. Like, there's all really good reasons to do it. They just need to get to that sort of specific definition.
Mm. The writer of this piece wraps this up by writing, I, for one, would actually love to read the definitive NIST wiki on government email or content management or text-based chat or off-site backup and so on and
exactly
so forth.
Right.
And that's getting right to
that gets to the guidance,
the crux of this.
Provide.
That's right. Tim Hecht's story number two is from Wired.com, Why NIST Should Scrap the Cloud Entirely. And you can read it linked up now on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The number one most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Tim Hecht and Deborah Roth, when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Is video technology critical to your agency mission? Then make plans now to attend Government Video Expo. November 29th through December 1st at the Washington Convention Center in D.C., Government Video Expo is the largest gathering of video production, broadcast, and AV professionals in the East. Hear former White House videographer Arun Chaudhry speak about capturing the White House from behind the lens and learn how the DOT has used video to communicate with the public from Transportation Public Affairs Specialist Justine Adelisi. Walk the show floor to discover the latest technology from over 100 exhibitors. Get your hands on AV gear, storage solutions, and software from brands like Panasonic, Canon, JVC, and more. Network with cross-sector colleagues and learn how they're moving their agencies and businesses forward in these challenging times. Log on now to gvexpo.com for details. Register with the code 1500AM for a free exhibit hall pass and conference discounts. That's gvexpo.com. Register with code 1500AM. Don't miss the Government Video Expo.
How would you like up to $50 out of the blue? That's the wellness incentive from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Complete our Blue Health Assessment and get up to $50 for qualified medical expenses. $50 out of the blue. Who knew? To learn more about the Federal Employee Program, visit whoknew.fbpblue.org or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Jane Oates, the Assistant Secretary for the Employment and Training Administration at the Labor Department.
Veterans put in their military job code. You're in the Army and you're a 91B. Put that into My Next Move for Veterans and you can get all the jobs that utilize those skills in the civilian workforce so that we can target your work search to those specific employers.
Hear the entire interview online. federalnewsradio.com/federal. Drive.
It's the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tim Hecht of AgileX and Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth choosing the stories in the countdown this week, and we're up to
number one.
Tim Hecht's most important federal news story of the week is from the Wall Street Journal. The headline is Army Aims to Save by Buying Less, More Often. Now, as I read this piece, Tim, the concept, I think, is very logical, makes a lot of sense. But if I've read one possibility for acquisition reform at the Pentagon in the last six months, I've read 40 different ways that different people are proposing to approach the same idea. And I just wonder at what point we get to where somebody says, this is definitely how we're going to do it, at least for a long enough period of time that we can ascertain that we're either going to get the kind of results that we want or we're not.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily make any claims on their ability to get themselves to actually do this. The presentation of their line of thinking is on the right sheet of music, right? So basically what it says is they are going to have more agile processes involved when they select and they develop and select and implement and deploy new technologies. And this has been a priority for us in our work all throughout government, mm-hmm. is taking these arcane processes for engineering new systems, frankly, processes that were developed to build aircraft carriers and dams and, you know, huge things that don't work when I'm trying to rapidly get technology or information technology or even weapons system technology to bear quickly. You can't spend all this time evaluating bogged down in a procurement process and in an engineering process. So what we've been seeing a lot across government, not just in this example, is a mind toward a much more iterative and focused approach to narrow the set of requirements that you're trying to satisfy, get quickly deploy solutions. When they work, throw gasoline on them, and when they don't work, put them out and move on. Mm-hmm. And so everything from rapid proof of concepts and prototype deployments to failing fast. You know, I'm going to fail anyway. I'd rather fail quickly so that I learn from it and then adjust. And I might be able to fail 3-4 times and then get it right in the time it took me to have one of these massive failures, a fraction of the cost. And so that message is now what they're saying in this article, that they want to take that approach, more wholesale approach to the way they do this, rather than having, you know, a set of requirements that takes months and then 3 or 4 competitors that they select two, and then they do prototypes for 3 months and then they pick. They're going to say, look, we're going to have a much more rapid life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is this will not only save a fortune, it will get better solutions deployed more quickly. Mm-hmm. Because 9 times out of 10, these 13 to 15 to 18 month life cycle things never get there. Mm-hmm. And they become 24, right. 36, 48 month things that still spend money and fail. So mm-hmm. So this will not only cost less, it will work better.
And the thing about this that I think is the most appealing is this stuff's being tested by end users. Yep. Equipment will be being evaluated this month by 3,800 soldiers at White Sands and Fort Bliss, could debut in Afghanistan as early as 2013. But I can't tell you how many vendors I've talked to who tell me on the air and off the air, the end users never touch my stuff until it's time for them to start using it that first day.
So we have this agile development project that's that we do inside the VA. And every 2 weeks they get together and they see a demo of what's coming on.
Mm-hmm.
And one comment I get all the time is how boring the demos are.
Because everything works?
Well, because when you only see a demo, you're a user, and you only see a demo 18 months in, it better be good. Mm-hmm. I've been waiting 18 months for this.
Yeah.
But when I see it every 2 weeks, I see, oh, it's better than last time. Oh, it's great. Oh, you moved that over here. Oh, it's great. It's looking great. But you know what? To an outsider, they're sort of boring. But to the users are no longer just, wait. Mm-hmm. We'll show you when it's ready.
Yeah.
They're engaged in the process. They're seeing it as it unfolds. They're giving feedback as it develops. And that has changed the tempo and how quickly we can get to a deployable solution like nothing we've seen.
The number one story of the week, according to Tim Hext on the Federal News Countdown, is from the Wall Street Journal. The headline is Army Aims to Save by Buying Less More Often. All of the stories that we're counting down in the program today are linked up for you at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You have 3 guesses, and the first 2 don't count, about what Deborah Roth's number one story of the week is. You'll hear it next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
To make a commitment is to see things through, confident that no matter what the obstacles, we can build something better together. With the planned combination of AT&T and T-Mobile, we're making a commitment to create a stronger network for all our customers. We will invest an additional $8 billion and build out the next generation of mobile broadband to nearly everyone in America. Building that network will mean better coverage, better call quality, and faster downloads. But it will also create as many as 96,000 American jobs, and we will begin bringing 5,000 jobs to America from overseas. We're committed to investing in America now. Why? Well, we know it's good business, because America has always been, and always will be, a smart investment. AT&T. Rethink possible.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
We raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise high with GW basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
Quest Government Services is now CenturyLink Government. CenturyLink is positioned to support your mission objectives and provide you with an enhanced product and service portfolio. With our global reach, expanded nationwide network, and strong financial standing, we are the partner for IT leaders looking toward a stronger, more connected tomorrow. Your link to the future begins here. See the benefits of partnering with us at CenturyLink.com/federal.
Join a firm at their December 8th luncheon for an in-depth discussion of government contracting trends and techniques. Hear highlights on what's hot and what's not in federal acquisition as Tech America unveils usage trends for IDIQs, GWACs, and schedule contracts. A lively panel moderated by Wyatt Cash of AOL Government will follow with experts from NASA, GSA, NIH, and Navy discussing innovations in government contracting. Lunch and learn with a firm at the Sofitel Hotel on Thursday, December 8th at noon. Register today at affirm.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by Tim Hecht of AgileX and Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. And Deborah, your story number one is from the New York Times. The headline is Lawmakers at Loggerheads on the Deficit, and this story deals both with the continuing resolution situation that we're in and with what some observers are calling the minibus, which reminds me of the short bus, which I'm not sure is an apt analogy in this particular case. But the Senate voted 70-30 after a vote in the House of 298-121 to pass not only a continuing resolution through December 18th, mm-hmm. but also the entire fiscal 2012 budgets for five cabinet agencies and also for some of the smaller science agencies. Is this a glimmer of hope, maybe? Or, I mean, full disclosure, I said earlier in the program, I'm not as optimistic as Tim is. I'm more in your camp about what this means for the overall process. But what do you see here from an agency perspective?
Well, I mean, the continuing resolution, it's December 16th because we have many federal employees listening. And
you're right. My mistake.
I mean, and every day to them yes. counts. So they've been under a CR now, I think, for a year. And if you are in parts of the agency where you actually have to run it and you have to figure out, you know, how much money you have and how you're going to spend it, it's extremely difficult when you don't know what your funding levels are going to be. So to have a CR and to actually get it, like I use this term loosely, on time is helpful, you know, as they head into the end of the year. I'm not sure about my level of optimism because my story is about the super committee having to come back with its recommendations by Wednesday, and they still are not in agreement, or so they report.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were betting my 401k, I would bet that I hope I'm wrong that they can't agree. Mm. I mean, that's just been their history
yeah.
for the last year. Although I must say, the fact that they could get that level of support for the CR sort of puts me in Tim's camp. It's an interesting place where we're at. Although when you read and listen to what the super committee says about where they are, it sounds a lot like the summer about mm-hmm. where they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tim and I talked before the show, and I think he's right, and I certainly had this perspective. The people who are actually on the committee, you know, their tools, their faces. The real deals are being made by the party leadership. Mm-hmm. And that's been super quiet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't – we may have to go back to tape. I'm not sure what I said that made me sound optimistic. But
well, more but optimistic than either of us, I will say that.
I think maybe my main thought was given the what we were talking about with their popularity, political survival is a new dimension mm-hmm. inside their thinking. It's no longer just job responsibility to do a good job.
I'm not sure it's been job responsibility for a while.
Right, yeah. But
it's get the other party out.
Yeah, if most of us think our job is to govern here, let's govern. We clearly aren't necessarily focused on that. But if we add a dose of political survival, does that change their behavior? And does it mean that they will come up with at least something that they can claim is enough of a victory to say that they completed their task? I call that maybe a pessimistic view of human nature, but an optimistic view that they might actually do something.
Well, and that's more optimistic, I will say again, than either Debbie or I, but here we are anyway. And here we are at the end of the program, too, unfortunately. I always love having both of you on the countdown. I appreciate time that you put into this and the thought that you put into it very much and coming in today and being on the program. Tim Hext of AgileX, thank you very much.
Thanks for having
for being
me.
Here. Happy to. And Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk is on Friday mornings at 11. And what time are you on with the Federal Drive on Thursday mornings,
about 7:40 a.m.
All right, on the legal loop there. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose is right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. And a reminder, all of the stories that we talked about on the Federal News Countdown today are linked up on the In-Depth page at federalnewsradio.com. Back in just a few moments.